State Senator Charles Schwartner joins us this morning. Good morning, Senator.
Good morning, Scott.
Let's when we started this legislative session, things started to move along. Everything seemed to be going well. Obviously, when there's a little more money in the bank, everybody feels good. But now we're getting to the 11th hour, and
We only have four more days.
Right, and the two bodies don't seem to be able to get together now. Y'all had kind of extended an olive branch with your joint resolution that you passed unanimously. House Bill 500 you passed unanimously, mm-hmm. And now you're not really happy with the way the House is behaving.
Well, this is a process of democracy. We have two legislative bodies, obviously the Senate and the House, and I would say that the Senate's been more unanimous in its deliberations. The House has had a little trouble. It's kind of House versus House right now in reference to the path they want to take. There are members that view education as the foremost priority. There are other individuals on the House side that look at maintaining a very low spending and tax cuts as the primary reason that they're there. So it's been a difficult, I think, more difficult deliberation on that side about how they want to proceed.
Yeah, but what you've done is the Senate, you've basically tied the franchise tax relief bill, which the governor says that he wants, is now tied up in the House. And, I mean, y'all have pretty much thrown the gauntlet down and challenged him there.
Well, I think that we need to have some further discussion about the tax relief bill, and I think it's important to have tax relief this session. I talked to lots of small businessmen and making sure that the $1 million exemption of the franchise tax is made permanent is a very important plank of what I'd like to do. And tying that in a way, under the leadership of Senator Williams is, I think, a reasonable way to handle it, to make sure it gets done.
One of the things that I believe Senator Patrick wanted to do was, in fact, raise that to $2 million mm-hmm. rather than one. Your thought on that?
Well, that amendment did not get added on to
right.
HB 500 last night. That was, a 28-2 vote. I voted against it. It wasn't something that had been deliberated in the Finance Committee to any great extent. And to tack something like that on at the very end is probably not the best way to govern.
Senator Charles Schwartner joining us this morning from Austin. Of all those people who don't seem to have a voice in the political process, those people who are mentally challenged, I think, fall in that category.
Certainly.
SB 7 talks about mental health. Now, mental retardation, they do get help, but mental illness does not. Am I correct there, as far as funding is concerned?
Well, SB 7 speaks to individuals with intellectual and developmental disabilities,
okay.
Those that are unable to really care for themselves. And the state has an absolute role to play in the care of those individuals, obviously along with the families. And that bill really expanded managed care to allow for increased service and efficiencies and hopefully to lower costs in the service to those types of individuals.
One of the things, again, that may not be on everyone's radar screen, but because you're a physician and it's something that that you certainly have a great deal of knowledge about, having to do with independent pharmacies who are trying to keep their doors open and having some problems because there's not the transparency that they would like to have when it comes to negotiating for
That's
rates
right.
for Medicaid managed care organizations.
Right. That was a top priority of small-town independent pharmacies and pharmacists. You might not know this, but I'm also a pharmacist as well.
Oh, really?
My undergraduate degree.
Okay.
On my mother's side of the family, I have four generations of small-town pharmacy. So I understand the issue well. We've been out of the pharmacy business for decades, but what that bill sought to do was level the playing field and increase the transparency and disclosure between small-town pharmacies and the individuals that are above them, the middleman called the pharmacy benefit managers.
Okay.
There's some opacity there, some disclosure that needed to happen in reference to how they go about their business.
One of the things that's kind of, I want to shift gears now for a minute, especially because what we're hearing about the IRS and in Washington, D.C., interesting in that there was a Senate bill, it was Senate Bill 345, that basically required nonprofits that were 501c4s to actually disclose the contributors who were giving, what, like $1,000 or more to these political causes. Now, again, that's been a big problem in D.C. that they're talking about investigation of them. Yet this is something that passed the Senate and then something kind of odd happened in the House.
Right. I think you're referring to Senator Seliger's bill. That bill spoke in reference to transparency as well in reference to political contributions. I think our, you know, the public and the individuals need to know who's behind who, and I think that bill spoke to that. Certainly it doesn't stifle an individual to give and to support a candidate, but I think it allows for that transparency for individuals to know who financially is behind a candidate.
Well, so people will understand that bill passed the Senate unanimously, but
right.
Then when the Republicans realized what they'd voted for, two-thirds of the chamber wanted to recall the bill from the House for a revote, and it didn't happen.
Right. You know, I stuck on the side of transparency and disclosure. I think that was the right thing to do from an ethics standpoint. And so I stuck with Senator Seliger. That bill was not sent back over from the House. It wound up passing the House and is on the governor's desk, and it will be up to him as to whether or not he would like to sign it or not.
Thoughts there?
It's the governor's decision. I wouldn't want to put forth a thought as to whether or not the governor will or will not sign a bill.
I'd be surprised if he signed it, but I find it interesting that you have to feel good in some ways that kind of legislation maybe is coming out of your elective body to have transparency.
I think it's should be a transparent obviously a transparent process. That's what we're down here to do, is to work for the people in a manner that is in the best interest of the people.
Well, we are. And with that in mind, I'm a little concerned, and I think Texans should be as well, when we find that benefits retirement for elected officials is somehow tucked inside along with state district judges' raises and their retirement plans. We discussed this yesterday, and I think that these constituents who called this radio station said, we just want you to be upfront about this. And it seems as though those two things are tied together, and it's done in the dark of night that you your benefits package as state representatives and senators goes up, but it's behind the guise of we're doing this for our state district judges.
Yeah, well, I filed a bill that would have improved in reference to retirements, if you'd had a criminal record while serving or been indicted and convicted of a felony, would have mandated that you would never receive any sort of retirement benefits if you were a state legislator. I do think our judges need an increased pay raise in reference to their service. They, I think, are underpaid in reference to the job they do. I personally don't feel necessarily that legislators should have a pay raise. That's the way it's done historically in the state of Texas, is that the legislature's pension is prorated and is also is tied to state judges' salary.
Okay, but I guess what I'm asking, and certainly somebody who's done wrong should not get a pension. What I'm saying is, let's extract this. Let's put this over here separately in the light of day, that if you're going to increase your pension as an elected representative, that be separate and apart from what you're doing for state district
judges. I think that's a reasonable argument to make, yes.
Well, I guess we'll visit one more time. We'll be out of session next week, and maybe you won't have a special session, but I'm thinking we probably will. Right?
We'll know over the next 16 hours as to the finality in reference to the budget. That's obviously the most pressing and sticking point between SJR 1 on the House side and House Bill 1025 on the Senate side. One thing I'd like to add, though, in reference to Bryan College Station in particular, this has been the best session for higher ed in a long time, and A&M in particular. It's been overall a pretty good win for A&M and higher ed. So I'm pleased to report that.
Excellent. And we'll look forward to wrapping it up and talking about it next week. How's that?
Okay.